The title of this message is The Road to Emmaus. If you turn to John chapter 19, verse 25. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene. Other than John, all the other apostles and disciples and men, they went into hiding. They were scared. Jesus had been crucified, and they thought they were next. They just took off and bailed out of there. And then in Luke chapter 24, I can find it here, verse 10, it says, it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women that were with them, which told these things unto the apostles. What things? They had been to the sepulcher, and they saw it was empty, and they had come back, and it said, and their words seemed to, in verse 11, and their words seemed to them as idle tales, and they believed them not. I want you to, I'll come back later, but remember that Mary, the mother of James, and she was the wife of Cleophas. And it's the next verse, it says, and behold, two of them went the same day to a village called Emmaus, which is from Jerusalem about 70 furlongs. It's about a 7 or 8 mile walk. And they, at that point, were devastated. I don't know why they left. It was the third day. Jesus said on the third day he would rise again. And they'd take off for home. It doesn't seem to make sense, but there they were headed home, and they talked of all the things which had happened. The two angels were there at the sepulcher and said, he has risen. Don't you remember? He said that would happen on the third day. And in one of the other gospels, they said, when that happened, where did they lay the body? Are you kidding me? And it says, when they, and verse 14, and they walked together and all these things, and they talked together and all these things which had happened. What things? You know, the cross and all that. But they're headed home, they feel defeated, depressed, angry, hurt, not knowing what to do next. I guess it's all over. We'll just go home. I don't know what else to do. Is that the way some of us live some days? We don't know what to do next. So we'll just do our daily thing and live it out, and our end will come someday, and we'll just be off, and it'll be all over. And you would have thought they would have stayed in Jerusalem just to see what the action was. But most of them, like I said, had been in hiding. Verse 15 says, and it came to pass while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. Isn't that timing of Jesus always wonderful? And it's verse 16 says, but their eyes were holden that they should not know him. And he said unto them, verse 17, what manner of communication are these that you have one to another, and he walk and are sad. Why are you down? What's going on? And one of them, whose name was Cleophas, remember we mentioned before, answered and said unto him, are you the only stranger in Jerusalem that hasn't known the things which come to pass? And Jesus says, what things? That sounds like me talking to Gilbert. Gilbert the other day come up and says, hi, Grandpa. And I look at him and says, Gilbert, what are you talking about? And I played dumb with him. And I had a lot of fun with him. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, they can ask Scott and Emma. I'm not saying anything more. Anyhow, and he says, unto what things? And they said, well, you're a stranger, didn't you hear? They had crucified the Lord. They had this unjust trial, the beatings, the cross, 3 hours of darkness, of earthquakes, the veil was rent in two. The saints were coming out of the grave. And then we went to the sepulcher. Now it's empty. And now we don't feel we have any hope. We're totally demoralized and had given up. How he was delivered up to the chief priest and the different rulers, and they condemned him to death, all that. And they had trusted that it was him. Here's what shows the greed of mankind, maybe. They trusted that he should have redeemed Israel. They wanted something for their own personal gain. They wanted, it's like us politically. Well, we get that politician, boy, things are going to be different. And it was a political thought in their minds. Anyway, I want to get back to a little bit to this. Who is Cleopas? And why is he mentioned just a couple times in the Bible without knowing much about him? Well, in John 25, it says, Mary, the mother of Jesus' sister. What do you mean? Two girls named Mary in the same family? May have been stepsisters, may have been a sister-in-law. We really don't know. But Cleopas was her husband. It was Cleopas and his wife walking home that day. That was the other disciple. And why were their eyes holding? What do you mean? They can't see him? This is Pete Smith theology now. If you turn to Matthew 27, verse 29... And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head, and he reed in his right hand, and they bowed a knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews! And they spit on him and took a reed and smote him on the head. I studied out that reed. When I first think of a reed, I think of these long grassy things about that high in the wet areas, the lakes, you know. Well, that wouldn't hurt. But if you study out a reed in the Middle East, there's four different types. One is called a kana. It'd be about as high as a ceiling up here. Gets about an inch in diameter. It's hollow and it has ridges on it. Remember the old cane poles, anyone? It would be like that, and they would cut them and use them as a walking stick. They would dry, they were light, but they were very strong. And they would use them for offense purposes, defense purposes, wading across creeks or rivers to poke ahead to find the drop-offs. But they took one of these, and it says they would hit him on the face, on the head. They hit him, and they hit him, and they hit him, and they hit him some more. And it gets real interesting. You turn to Isaiah. Chapter 50, verse 6. And I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. I hid not my face from shame and spitting. He would look them in the eye when they would hit him and spit on him. And they took his beard and they pulled it right out. It had to be a gruesome, gruesome thing. In Isaiah 52, 14, it says, As many as were astonished at thee, his visage was so marred, more than any man, and his form more than the sons of man. I like the easy read version better. It is true that many were shocked when they saw him. He was so beaten, so badly, no longer looked like a man. You couldn't recognize him. He was beaten. Remember I said Mary was at the cross? She saw it firsthand. The beating, that he could not recognize Jesus no more. So when You see these pictures of Jesus on the cross with little thorns and a couple drips of blood. It's kind of a sad look like this. That does a great disservice to God and mankind. His face was a mush mess for us, for you, for me, all of us. Getting back to the book of Luke. Jesus said, he had said what things, but he trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And beside all this, third day, since all these things, yea, and certain women also of our company made us astonished, which were early at the sepulchre. And when they found not the body, they came and saying that these had also seen a vision which said he was alive. And certain of them were with them, went to the sepulchre and found it, even as women said, but him they saw not. Then he said unto them, O fools and slow of heart, to believe all the prophets have spoken. Christ must suffer these things and enter into his glory. And that's when he took off. When Jesus preached, there's nobody like him. He took them all the way back to Genesis, all the way through the prophets. And he said, don't you know it was he that breathed into the life into man and became a living soul? In Exodus, he was a Passover lamb that was, his blood was shed for us. In Exodus, he was a Passover. I did that one, okay. Leviticus, he was our high priest who went before God for us with the sacrifice. In Numbers, he was a guiding fire by night. Deuteronomy, he was Moses' voice, the great apostle of Israel. In Joshua, he is a choice of salvation. Choose you this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. In Judges, he was the lawgiver. In Ruth, he was a kinsman redeemer. In Samuel, he is our trusted prophet. In Kings and Chronicles, he is our King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Ezra, he is a true and faithful scribe. In Nehemiah, he is a rebuilder of broken walls and broken lives. Esther, he is the courage of Mordecai. Job, he is our timeless redeemer and our double portion. In Psalms, he is the morning song that brings us joy in the middle of the wilderness. Proverbs, he is wisdom's cry. Ecclesiastics, he said, don't you know all this? Don't you know all this? He's saying to him. In Ecclesiastics, he's the times and the seasons. He's always with you. In Isaiah, he's the Prince of Peace. Jeremiah, he's the weeping prophet crying over Jerusalem. Lamentations, he's the longing for Israel. Ezekiel, he's the call out of sin. In Daniel, he's a stranger in the fire. When you're going through the fire, he's there. In Joel, he's the spirit that will baptize the church. Amos, he's the arms that carry us. Obadiah, don't you know he's the Lord, your great Savior? In Jonah, he's a missionary seeking the lost. In Micah, he's the promise of peace. In Nahum, he's our strength and our shield. In Habakkuk, in Zephaniah, he's the voice pleading with us, pleading with his people to be revived. Haggai, he is restorer of our lost heritage. Zephaniah, he is a fountain filled with blood from Emmanuel's veins. And Malachi, he is the son of righteousness that shall arise with wings of healing. Every page of the Old Testament points to Jesus. Think about that. I can find him in a lot more places than what I just described. He's everywhere. And then, getting back into Luke chapter, into verse 28, and they drew nigh unto the village whither they went, and he made, though he's going to go a little bit further, he's just like, I'm going to move on. But they constrained him, saying, abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent. And he went to tarry with them. And it came to pass, as he sat at meat, he took bread and blessed it and brake it and gave it to them. And their eyes were open that they should know him, and he vanished out of their sight. What do you mean? What did they see all of a sudden at that point? When he broke the bread, he handed it to them, and they saw the nail-scarred hands. I think at that point they go, oh my God. They were stunned. When you meet Jesus head on, you'll be stunned too. What is the meaning of breaking of bread? What do you think it is? The breaking of bread is to share with someone. When you break it, you share it. You share things. If you wouldn't break it, you'd be all alone. He's with us. And many things happen at a table. When people get together and eat, it seems like they drop their guard and become more personable. Anybody ever notice that? I think of a couple of three stories. Anybody ever heard of Leo Buscala? Anybody know who he is? He's a professor of love. Very, very interesting man. And he had 8 siblings. And when they come to the table at night, they had to tell their mom and dad what they learned that day. So he said, a half hour before supper, we're digging in the encyclopedias, trying to figure out what we're going to talk about. It's kind of neat what the parents did there. Not only did you learn one thing that night, you learned 8. He's a remarkable man. Then there's Dr. Johnny James, an apostolic preacher. He had a sister. The mother was an apostolic minister. You had to learn a new word every day before you could eat supper. And then he would discuss it, the proper grammar use. I don't know anyone who has more command of the English language than Johnny James. He has memorized now the Bible and the Koran, and he speaks 5 languages fluently. And he'd credit that to his mother's training. But then I also think of David, King David in 1 Samuel 20:25. And it says, and the king, that's Saul, sat upon his seat, as at other times, even upon the seat by the wall. And Jonathan arose, and Abner sat by Saul's side. David's place was empty. This was a feast day. How many of you would like to say, sit with the most powerful man in your kingdom for lunch today? Trump, or if you don't like him, Hillary, I don't care. But you'd have lunch and you could have anything you wanted. But David wasn't there. And so why wasn't he there? Because Saul wanted to kill him. Saul was so mad that he wasn't there, he threw a javelin at his own son. The question I have for you now, who or what is at your table? Is it good things? Fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, all of them. Or is it bad things? Gossip, hatred. You got a choice as to what you want at your table. Not my choice, not Pastor Todd's choice. I'm sure he'd like to have you speak certain things, but it's going to be your choice. I know many tables where there's bitterness, fighting, depression, or is it joy, peace, and a good time? All of us have been on our own road to Emmaus. Maybe you're on it right now, I don't know. But I can tell you this, Jesus can turn the worst day of your life into the very best day of your life, just as he did Cleophas and Cleophas' wife, which, by the way, if you look close, it's his aunt and uncle. They were really special. They knew him from the time he was very small. And it just, I get to the point and I think of what they done to Jesus. How they handed him over. The chief priest handed him to the high priest that took him to the council before Pilate. Handed him over. It's kind of a legal term. And then Jesus, he went to Satan. See, Satan had all that control before. He had power over many things. The death, the grave, all that stuff. And he says to Satan that day, hand over the keys now. If that don't excite you, that was all over. We had won at that point. It's over. He's done it for us. He'll do it for you. Like I said, I'm going to be short-winded, so go ahead and stand. This is what I have to say in the end. As Joshua said, choose you this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You have a choice every single day. It's not a one-time choice. It's an everyday choice. You can go out of here the same way as you came in, or you can come out of here a different person. It's totally up to you. It's not up to me. It's up to you and Jesus. He'll meet you where you're at, just like he did Cleophas and his wife. It's up to you. It's an everyday choice.